Today's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by SeatGeek.
I certainly wish that I had SeatGeek when I conceived the Star Wars universe.
Oh my god, folks, it's George Lucas in studio to do the SeatGeek ad. Hi, George.
I have a lot of time on my hands since handing off the Star Wars universe to Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams.
Wow, that's great. So how are you using the app there, George?
Well, you know, I use SeatGeek for all of my ticket purchases, whether it's a game or a concert or if perhaps the Jar Jar Binks on Ice is coming to town.
Sure.
So I download the SeatGeek app, and I'm able to see all of the different price comparisons for all of the different concerts and sporting events, multiple ticket sites, ensuring that I get the best possible deal. Unlike the deal Disney gave me, because apparently there was a lot more juice in that lemon than I thought there was with the Star Wars.
Lesson learned there, I guess. And you can't use the SeatGeek app for pod races, but what are some of the things that
well,
you use
no,
it for?
Well, no, that's because the Bantu Festival only happens once a millennia on Tatooine. But if you are there for it, I highly suggest checking out the pod racing. It's pretty wizard.
Wow, it is great to have you here.
Here's what you need to do if you are someone who is interested in getting this SeatGeek app. You have to download it with your mobile device. You have to get the free SeatGeek app, and then you get a $20 rebate. Download it, go to Settings, tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code J-E-D... S-O-U-P for soup. And then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the app, go to Settings, click Add a Promo Code, enter the promo code soup. Go back to the beginning, add some CGI monsters.
No. You don't want to ruin the actual app.
Change the ending of a perfect movie with Hayden Christensen's ghost and several other celebrations undercut.
Here we go.
Get rid of Yub-Nub, even though it's a great song. Did I mention, Dave, that I found out that Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford had an affair on the set of Star Wars?
No.
That's right.
That's amazing.
When she says, I love you, and he says, I know, it's because they were boinking.
They've already done it. So, of course he knows. That's obvious.
Download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code SOUP today. And be sure to check out Rogue One from Disney, because apparently there's more Star Wars to make. And I'm making art films that I'm never actually going to make because I'm inherently lazy and awfully high.
Anyway, here's the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy Blog.
And I am Dave Lozo of Perpetual Sadness and Anxiety.
And you're in Puck Soup. That wasn't a beer I was cracking open, although considering current events, maybe I should be on my 10th.
I was saying this at your wedding. Like, your wedding on Friday was the first time I drank since the election, because I'm not a sad drinker. I'm not somebody who, like, when bad things happen, I'm like, I need a beer. But if sad things happen while I'm drinking, oh, buddy, I can keep it going.
It's funny. Listen, I want to say off the top that we're not going to make this a political show or a show in which we talk about the election all that much. If you really want to hear it, I highly recommend the Keeping It 1600 podcast on the Ringer Network to hear three liberals who are still trying to figure out whether they should just throw a toaster in the bathtub or not, because it is a really sad listen.
If I had a bathtub in my apartment, I probably would have already done the toaster thing by now. So.
But you're right about that, though. Like, I haven't really talked about the election all that much anywhere. But
we did this Tuesday last week.
Yeah, I know.
Because we were so sure. Like,
yeah.
What's the point of doing it on a Wednesday?
Plays like fucking satire now. Is what it does.
I know.
But it's like I was so bummed that I didn't even drink that night. You're right. Like, and that's, yeah, I mean, I can't even think of a life event where I wouldn't be able to drink to make it all go away.
But it was also too, like, they call the election at like 2:30 in the morning, and at that point to go to my fridge and crack open a beer at 2:45 would have been even sadder than what just happened.
Now here's the conundrum I have right now about Trump vis-a-vis the content of this podcast. He's a hockey fan. Like, he's been to multiple Rangers games. Like, you could find pictures of Trump, Melania, and John McEnroe
the sport
at a Rangers game.
The sport with all the white people playing.
Right.
What a shock.
Make hockey great again. Okay. Maha. Wait, Matt. Make it, no.
I didn't figure out what that hashtag meant for like a week. I was so exhausted. I didn't even bother to click on it because
I thought it was
somewhere bad.
For a lady like I thought her name was Magda.
Yeah, like I thought it was like a name. I was like Melania and George. just leave me alone.
It's Make America Gayer Again.
I wish.
Now listen, he's a hockey fan. He's been to Ranger games. I looked it up today because I got into this is going to shock you, a Twitter fight with somebody from Washington.
Yeah, I was on the subway today when all that Penguins cap stuff happened.
So for those who didn't see, the Penguins
owned the Capitals.
The Penguins owned
Twitter.
The Capitals by tweeting out a picture of two banners. One, their Stanley Cup banner from 2016.
One was Bruce Banner. One was the comedian David Banner. And as we all know, Bruce Banner's a Penguins fan, so he's better.
And the other one was the Washington Capitals Metropolitan Division Championship banner.
It's a good burn.
And it was a great burn.
Very good burn.
The Capitals, in their flailing little brother who just got a noogie way,
they tried,
tweeted out a banner that had a picture of, it was the Capitol building, I think is what it was. It wasn't even the White House.
No. I thought I saw one that was just, it was like an actual banner with like Photoshopped.
Capitol building. And then it was said like, when Washington became the capital to now, and then trying to say, hey, we're the capital of the U.S. and you're Pittsburgh. Was there a sick burn?
It was some sort of burn where it was like Washington, D.C. is better than Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Which was like, you can get away with that if you're like Chicago or you're like New York. You can't, I mean.
Listen, I don't want to turn this into a bashing of D.C., but I'll do it for 1 second. Washington, D.C. culture is this. It's a bunch of neighborhoods all the white people don't want to live in, so they all move to Virginia. And then the rest of the culture is bought to D.C. by people that work there from other places because they're all government workers. Which is why there's a billion Penguins fans at every Capitals game.
And also, of all the times in the world to brag about where you live.
Well, okay. Getting back to my original point. There hasn't been, as far as I can tell, there's not been a sitting president who's attended a Washington Capitals game since William Jefferson Clinton.
Obama didn't go to one game once?
Obama has never been to a Capitals game.
Huh.
Obama has never been to a Capitals game. Clinton went in 1998 as a guest of Abe Pollin, okay? And there's not been a president that went since.
So what you're telling me is that drought at some point will be broken, and we're going to see like some locker room photo of him and like Alex Ovechkin and Putin like arm in arm or something.
They are akin. They're akin now, him and Ovi. Both wearing their Putin t-shirts.
Like every day I wake up and I'm always like, all right, what horrible thing is going to happen today in relation to this?
Is it good for hockey if Trump's a celebrity puckhead?
It's bad for everybody. It's not good for anything. Like
he's going to lower taxes on the rich. So they're going to be able to go to more hockey games because they're the only ones who go to hockey games.
Yeah, great. So more rich assholes can sit by the glass and bang on the glass. That's the one thing hockey's missing.
I was at the Islanders Lightning game on Monday, and I'm not trying to pile on the Islanders here because I've been doing it a lot on the blog, but boy, oh boy, is that a dead arena. Like,
it's bad.
The only things that you hear now are individuals chanting, "Fire Cappy," but they can't get anybody to join in with them. One, because Islanders fans are so apathetic, and two, because they're papering that building more than a ticker tape parade as far as the amount of tickets they're giving
sold,
away.
Yeah.
I went on Monday for free. I'm sure everybody in my section was there for free because they were all talking about it. There was two guys from South Africa behind me who never saw a hockey game before and were asking about what they were watching.
Were they the guys from Lethal Weapon?
They were not. They were actually. Yeah, there was a guy who wanted a beer. He didn't pay for it. He said diplomatic immunity. No, but like it was so clear that everybody there, a lot of the people there didn't pay for their tickets. And I think that contributes to the atmosphere as well. I remember talking to a guy who worked for the Capitals back when I covered them, like at the dawn of the Ovi era. Mm-hmm. And the Capitals were having trouble filling the building. And he talked about I asked him, like, so is the solution just to create an atmosphere? Have as many people as you can to come to that building and create an atmosphere. And even if you have to get them through the door for free. And his answer was no. That's not the solution.
Apparently, I've brought that up too, where I said, like the Devils, I think it was, or any team, Florida, Arizona, who doesn't sell their tickets.
Florida was notorious for it.
Right, but like if you know 40 out of 41 games, like the Rangers will play in Florida, that's how that came out because it's the New York thing. But I always said, like, if you just at a certain point, say at like 6 o'clock on Friday, if games on Friday, games at 7 o'clock, you say at 6 o'clock we're going to release, you know, wait online. It's like a thing where you sit outside all day and like at a certain point they're just like, we're going to release these tickets. Isn't that better than just letting them go to waste? And I'm always told no, and I don't get
the
why.
The economic
not.
Theory he gave me back in the day was you have to place a value on the ticket. So if I'm Joss from South Africa, let's say. If I'm one of those District 9 aliens in human skin who attended the Islanders game on Sunday.
But you're not Blick.
He's right. You are. No, you fucked it up.
No, wait.
But you're Blick.
Oh, that's what it is.
Right, and Pesci goes, he's right. You are.
They fuck you with the free tickets. Then they fuck you by making you pay for them.
I got so sad because I was watching Lethal Weapon 4 the other day. And that's the one with Chris Rock in it. And I remember parts of that movie. I remember the bad guy had a mustache. Yeah. I remember they had armor-piercing bullets because Danny Glover at one point is like,
no,
armor-piercing bullets.
That's three.
Oh, you're right. That's three because four is Jet Li. Yeah. Right.
Jet Li gets a metal pipe through his chest and keeps fighting.
Exactly.
Sure.
He does that amazing jump off the banister in Danny Glover's house, which, by the way, talk about a place that must be really hard to resell. Well, over here is where the bathroom used to be, but the toilet exploded because of a bomb. And over here is where the banister used to be on the stairs, but Jet Li knocked it down with his karate kicking.
Actually, before we built it, here's what happened. We actually had a guy killed with a nail gun. But don't worry, we had an exorcist come in. There's no demons here.
And over here, though, is very nice. It's where the family used to gather to watch the young daughter in her first condom commercial. It's beautiful.
Here's the toilet where the owner actually sat and was pulled off while taking the dump.
It's amazing to think about how much of that shit sticks in your head. Like Lethal Weapon, I know it's like back again because it's on TV, but like those movies kind of like linger in the back of your brain a little bit. And my point is this. I got so sad watching Lethal Weapon 4 with Chris, because Rock was in 4, right, I think?
Yes. Okay. Yes. He's Butters.
Yeah.
No, Biscuits.
Well, gee, Mr. Gibson, I don't know.
Oh, did I really do that, Stan? I never made that connection until right now. I forgot that.
Oh, no. These are people that should be not locked up in a boat there, Mr. Gibson. We should save them.
Shut up, Butters.
Butters. I have to go over this shit.
Shut up, Butters.
Hey, sitting they are, Mr. Glover. Oh yeah, so they redid the fuck you at the drive through thing in 4 about cell phones.
Yeah.
Right. And I was just watching it, I'm like, did we really, was this the big like cheer, like was the audience like, was it like, I gotta get all these motherfucking snakes off the motherfucker, like was this the cheer line, like as soon as somebody heard okay, they're all like, oh shit,
here he comes
the dynamite of Lethal Weapon movies.
What year was that movie where cell phones were fucking you? Because like they must have been relatively new at that point.
That had to be like, I think it was like in the late 90s, right?
Was it that long ago?
It had to be. Oh, look, we have a magic box that can look up things on the internet.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon 4. What's your guess?
I'll say 2002.
98.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. 285.4 million at the box office.
1998, no one would have ever thought that Donald Trump would be installing white nationalists onto his cabinet.
No one would ever thought that.
I couldn't think of that. I couldn't think of that 8 days ago.
It's gonna be okay.
It's not. It's gonna be so bad.
It's not gonna be okay.
It's gonna be like so for the show. Like Greg was like, hey, I got an idea. Let's do five ways Trump's gonna make hockey great again. And I was like. Like, yeah, we could definitely think of 10 jokes, but like they're not funny anymore because like every Trump joke 8 days ago was funny because it was never going to be a real thing. So if you were like, hey, LOL, Trump doesn't believe in global warming, it's hilarious because he's never going to be the guy who's going to affect policy on that. And then like 8 days later, it's like, yeah, he's going to defund this. He's going to defund that. He's going to make this illegal. He's going to deport all these people. He's going to round up this. And it's just.
But don't you think at the end of the day.
I can't find the joke.
Don't you think at the end of the day, like his presidency. I said this before, like, you know, within 24 hours of the election, there were people kind of being like, you know, respect the president, you know, kind of thing.
Oh, that drives me. Like everyone pointed to like the Chappelle SNL monologue, yeah. Which was good until the part at the end. He's like, I'm going to give him a chance. It's like, whoa, no. Wait, whoa, no.
Oh, and by the way, let's just get that out of the way as well. That opening with McKinnon was garbage.
Oh, my God. I was...
It was garbage.
It was Real quick. Leonard Cohen died, what, the day before taping? Mm-hmm. 36 hours before?
Leonard Cohen.
So that means they thought of that. Like, the first thing Kate McKinnon thought when Leonard Cohen died was like, yes, I can do this song. And like, it's like, and if she didn't do it dressed up as Hillary Clinton, I think it's different. I think it's okay. But like, she's like, if I dressed up as Al Gore in 2000, when they finally called the election and performed, let's just say Hallelujah. Let's just say I did that song.
Yeah, just that song, yeah.
You would think I was a batshit insane person, and you would laugh me off. You would say, no, we're not doing that as the cold open on SNL in 2000, Dave. We have Phil Hartman here, right? He was still there at that point. Maybe he wasn't.
I'm just a caveman. I don't know about your white nationalists or your alt-right.
Like, between the fact that SNL gave that jackass a platform a year ago for 90 minutes, and Kate McKinnon stood on stage with him, and there's that. Then there's the whole, oh my God, like it's just so, like, and if you want it, like, it doesn't honor Leonard Cohen to do that. Like, if Leonard Cohen just died and she goes out on stage as Kate McKinnon, plays the song, it's beautiful and it's great, and like, it captures the mood. Like, dressing up as Hillary Clinton to do it just seemed so bad.
It's indicative, like, of their comedy. Because they didn't have teeth when he was there.
Yeah.
And it was like they punted. Like, we all looked to SNL for, or we used to at least, to be like, think about how they took out Palin.
Oh,
I know. Tina Fey shit took out Palin.
Every week.
The minute when Tina Fey did the I Can See Russia From My House line up there with Poehler, done. Stake through the heart. Forget about it.
And like, that was just, I mean, that was like, and they were basically making fun of the VP choice of a war hero.
Right, exactly.
And they couldn't muster anything better 4 years later.
The moment when you need them to grow some stones and like put it on the line about what this guy is and all of it. Like I fully expected to see Alec Baldwin one more time walking into the White House and just being like, oh shit, you know, just like having no concept of what he's gotten himself into.
It was like this apologetic guilty bit for 2.5 minutes
now,
where they felt bad about what they did.
They've been hoisting themselves on their own petard for a while about that. But let me ask you this, though, because you were somebody who had trouble, as I did as well, admittedly, kind of focusing on work after it, right?
Yeah,
so like, maybe it's the same thing with the writers there. They couldn't focus on, they had a 3-day window to figure out some shit, and they're just like, watch, trot out the most popular member of our cast in costume to sing a Leonard Cohen song.
But like, what if Leonard Cohen didn't die? What was the cold open if Leonard Cohen didn't die? That's what I want. Like, what did they have in their minds on like Thursday afternoon?
Oh, that's easy.
Like what? Like what?
Deal in Berlin, Bay of Pigs invasion, Lawrence of Arabia, British Beatlemania.
It's like that episode of South Park where like everything's shitty. Like that's how I feel. Like I put on the radio and it's like, put on the TV.
But my wedding wasn't shitty.
Oh, my wedding was good.
Yeah.
You got married at the perfect time where I can get slammed and I can do some Celine Dion karaoke.
You did My Heart Will Go On from Titanic. It was beautiful. We were a little bit wary of that because there was a political split in the room on our side of the family. No, on my side of the family too. And we just didn't want it to be actually the only political thing that was said the entire night that we heard, because we were in our little marriage bubble, was by the officiant at the end of the ceremony said,
oh yeah, what did she say?
She's like, I was born in Greece, I was raised in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Until earlier this week I was a proud American citizen.
Like whoa, hey, right, she commandeered your wedding for a political thing the way Kate McKinnon commandeered Leonard Cohen's death for a political thing.
One thing. I want to say one thing about that, because I found this fascinating. And then we'll get to the hockey thing real quick. This is what the show's about.
Yeah, there's hockey to talk
about. I found out that they're from our photographer, who's great, who, by the way, is a cousin of Rod Brindamore, no less.
Really?
Yeah. I found out from our photographer that she's like, who's officiating your wedding? And we're like, oh, this woman. She's great. She's like, oh, yeah, she's good. I've seen her before. Like, all the photographers, like, know who does the weddings, because I guess there's, a finite number of non-denominational ministers, right, who are women. And she's like, I'm really happy you didn't get this one. And we're like, who? She's like, well, there's this one officiant who will have like the most normal ceremony, and it'll be playful, it'll be fun, and whatever. And then she'll go into like a 20-minute diatribe about the way we treat Haitians.
Just like unscripted,
yeah.
unplanned.
And she's like, and a lot of us photographers are trying to band together and let people know to, like, you know, kind of like blackball her, you know, try to like
just like See, you know what's funny? The funniest thing she did. So this has happened twice in a week at MSG before a Ranger game. Like, they don't bring out John Amarante every game anymore. Right. They bring out like a different person almost every night. And they brought out a woman who clearly had a stage name. And it just, I laughed the whole song. And her name was Angela Wildflower.
Whoa.
Right. And I did one of those like I had to cover my mouth because I went and looked up a real name and it wasn't that. The moment at your wedding, I had the same exact thing happen because it was like this, you know, this, first of all, she had an Australian accent, which mm-hmm. I thought was British all the time until she mentioned Australia. Yeah. But like, it's like this classy woman saying beautiful things about love and romance and the bonds of love. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Do you two take each other?" And they both say, "Yes, we do." And the next thing she says is, "Marriage is really hard."
I know, right?
And I did the same thing. I was like, "Oh man, she roped him in to say yes." Now she's like, "Here's everything that you're going to hate." It was like the coolest little trick ever to get someone to say to marry them. There's going to be pain and suffering. But anyway, hit the rings. It killed me.
Good day, mate. Welcome to the Roach Motel. That is your marriage.
Please welcome Angela Wildflower.
Please welcome to the stage to sing your national anthem, Robin Sparkles.
Oh.
Who once met Mason Raymond, which is the opposite of name dropping.
She had a really nice anthem, though. It was just a good stage name.
A few things hockey-wise to talk about before we welcome in our guests this week. Let's talk about what the GM said up in Toronto. And as we do this show, a little bit of news broken by Pierre LeBrun.
Scott A.
Boy, you could have
Scott
predicted this shit as soon as they started playing hot potato with the Olympics.
Well, what's the latest?
NHL willing to sign off on Olympic participation. Ready? Ready?
If.
In exchange for extending the current CBA. But they're not sure how appealing that will be to the players.
Motherfucker. No, he didn't.
Devious sons of bitches.
Like, 3 days ago, he was playing all, like, aloof about why players wanted to have lockout protection in their contracts. And so 2 days later, he's like, we'll prevent the lockout.
Right. Bettman literally said the other day he didn't know why players were trying to get lockout protection into their contracts. He's like, why would you want to do that? It's not as if there's going to be another lockout.
Whenever he talks. Oh, God.
Let me just spell it out for the people that don't understand, because I know that the NBA currently has a path or currently has labor peace or a path to it.
They're right. They're all good.
Okay. Here's the thing, the difference between these two sports. I know it gets confusing because they both play in arenas. Let me spell it out for you. The NBA has 12 players on each team. Mm-hmm. Okay. The NHL has a lot more.
Like twice as many.
The NBA makes basically the gross national product of Sweden every year in revenue.
And they just started a new thing where they're like, everyone's contract like tripled.
Yeah. And everybody in the league makes $100 million, but they're like all underpaid because that's how much money the NBA makes.
It's insane.
The NHL can't have a team from Canada play on American television because the ratings margins are that small and they don't want to piss off the three or four sponsors that are willing to put their names on the product in NBCSN.
And in order to avoid what I pray to God is a player strike next time, I hope they just fucking sit out for 2 years because I'm tired of seeing them get effed. They won't. I mean, I know. Like, that's the thing is, like, what you do with the NHL, they will take advantage of your love of hockey in order to get you to take less money. Editorial over.
The total revenue for the NBA, according to the thing I'm seeing here, mm-hmm. is $5.2 billion in revenue generated last season for
That's
the
it?
NBA. That seems like it's low, doesn't it?
Because Bettman was just screaming about 4.8, right?
The NHL's total revenue, okay, for, I guess this is what I'm seeing here. Total revenue, $2.63 billion.
Oh, I thought I always saw the number 4 point something the last couple of years.
Sure.
But isn't the – oh, maybe it's already gone up then. Because obviously with the new TV contract, that's why everyone's making an insane boatload of money.
That's according to this. It may be – I know. I think I've heard the number 4 too, but I got to imagine the NBA number is smaller than, right? Point being is that the NBA makes a hell of a lot more money than the NHL does.
Right.
And the NHL's owners – are never going to roll over like and play nice because it's a perpetual cycle of these idiots handing out contracts that they then regret, and then they go to war for labor and with labor and try to correct their own mistakes. It's a never ending cycle. It's like the Matrix. Like, Zion's always going to get destroyed, and there's always going to be some douchebag who thinks he's the one who's going to try to save it, but then he'll just get it destroyed again unless he chooses love.
So But love is always choosing hockey, and that's how they get them to take less than they should, is because they know how much. But what a, this is like such a fucking, oh, this is so dastardly. They know how badly they want to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
So they're just going to cut them off at the pass and see, like, ah, oh, and now it makes the players look bad if they say, fuck off, we're not going to take this, because they're saying no to both the Olympics and having the CBA taken care of,
right,
3 years in advance.
It's like pretty devious, right?
It puts it all on the players when it's never, ever on the players.
It's like one of those situations where you're so upset by it on a human level. But on a master criminal level, you're like, it's kind of smart.
Right. It's like when you watch The Italian Job and you realize, like, you're rooting for these people that are stealing a safe from some guy who just had a safe, but it's such a great, cool plan. You're like, I'm rooting for Mark Wahlberg here.
Yeah. It's not like the player, it's not like, you know, the players are Terry Benedict and the NHL is the Ocean's crew.
Ocean's 13 is on HBO every four hours.
I know, and I keep sending you screenshots of it.
I know. I have to, like, not text you every 5 seconds because the teams are working on this. Really? How many? Teams! That's all I want to do is just shout lines of Ocean 13 at people.
I am Pepperidge. I'm in there.
No, you're not reading it. You're just a vessel.
Right.
So what are they going to do? They're not going to take this, are they?
No, I don't think so. As Pierre LeBrun mentions, escrow is a huge issue for players. And I think I have to think they want that tackled in the next CBA. They've got issues to worry about. I don't think they want to extend it any longer than it is. Frank Saravelli reports that Rene Fasal says he's not leaving New York City any more optimistic than he was about NHL participation in 2018 Olympics. Fasal says he's going back to Zurich with more work to do after meeting with the NHL and the PA. Basically, the news about the Olympics this week was that there is a money shortfall, about like $10 million between what the IOC might be willing to pony up to cover insurance costs and everything else, and what the NHL wants, and that the IIHF might have to fill in the void between those two just for a year, or just for this Olympiad, rather.
I have a hot take. If I'm the IOC, I don't care if the NHL comes based on the hours in which the games are going to be on TV, and the whole draw is getting a U.S.-Canada final. What have I seen from U.S. hockey that tells me they're going to be in the gold medal game?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to shell out all this money for a Finland-Canada final that no one's going to care about. Like,
yeah. Eh. Speaking of the Islanders, by the way, previously, Garth Snow, in defending Jack Capuano's the coaching acumen, goes, and if I'm mistaken, I believe he was an assistant at the World Cup of Hockey. I'm like, yeah, for a team that got their ass destroyed and limped home, sadly, I believe. But anyways, it's fine. The GMs also discussed one of the more common sense things I think I've ever heard them discuss vis-a-vis the shootout, which is to, and I feel like I'm looking at you and I'm wondering if you inherently disagree with this.
Because
I like the Oshie rule / Taves rule.
I don't care. I don't know why this is a thing. Like, the NHL is so good at, like, changing rules for shit and changing things that you never want to change, whether it's, like, divisions, you know, like they do all these things all the time, and I'm just like, people are like, hey, I got an idea that's gonna make the NHL better, and you're like, oh, what are we gonna do? How are we gonna get more Canadian teams on TV? No, are we gonna do something to increase goal scoring? Are we gonna, like, reduce goalie pad size or increase it? Nope. Oh, but what is it then? I'm excited. Okay, you know how after the first three rounds of a shootout, the really awesome guy who goes third can't go again? Yeah. What if he could go again? Great, sure. Okay. God, Gary, can you stop calling me with these stupid ideas? I don't like any of it. Like, I don't care.
They're like my dad when he's told he needs to do five things to fix the house. And then my mom gets home from wherever. She's like, what'd you do? And he's like, well, look, take a look over there. It's like, she's like, what? He goes, you notice anything about the record collection?
Alphabetized. Baby.
Meatloaf's right after Led Zeppelin now. How about them apples?
What is up with that? And also, just for the record, any band that starts with the, they're under the T's. Just want to make that clear. Like, when a shootout, like, you guys, I didn't actually watch this video. There was like a 23-round shootout in Switzerland or some
wherever,
shit.
Wherever, yeah.
I was like, why would I watch that? Why would I ever click on that and watch 46 guys not score?
And isn't it the weirdest thing that, like, they just got done creating 3-on-3 to reduce the shootouts, which it successfully did.
And now they're going to incentivize.
And now they're just like, yeah, right. In a way they are, because
really,
like,
good teams with really good shootout guys.
Yeah. And it's not even the stars either. Like, that's the big swerve here is, like, the minute you think you hear this, you're like, oh,
fuck, Sid versus Ovi for fucking 20 rounds. And then you're like, no, it ain't that. It's Franz Nielsen versus TJ Oshii because they both have a funky little shootout move.
Here comes Nick Leddy for the fourth time.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Rudy on the fourth line happens to know how to do the fucking lacrosse move, right, and now he's in there for 25 times.
They send out, what's his name from the Oilers, who's no longer in the NHL, the spinny thing.
Yeah, the, God, oh, shit, what was that guy?
Tiny little lefty guy.
Yeah, God, his name escapes me now, because all I can think of is Ryan Fabry, but it's the,
it's
see if you can get it before I Google
it's,
it.
It's,
oh, shit.
Nate something?
Oh, my God. Oh, Rob Shrimp. There it is. Jesus.
No, that's not who I was thinking
of. Oh, wait. You think about Linus Omark?
Linus Omark. That's what I was thinking of.
But Rob Shrimp was the lacrosse style guy.
Yeah, Omark was the guy who spun before he got the puck at center ice. Yeah, and somehow Dan Ellis's
That was the greatest
feelings were hurt.
Greatest night of anybody's life, where Marty Saint-Louis, whose entire career was spent spinning around in the corner trying to get away from defensemen because he's 4 foot one, goes, that spinorama is offensive to me.
How dare you, sir?
How dare you, sir?
Adam Oates is like, pardon me, sir, but I don't believe that quite fits into my plans as a gentleman playing hockey. And also, Marty Saint-Louis wouldn't even do the goddamn spinorama in the shootout. He'd jam on the brakes and stomp in a circle so that he could score on the goalie that slid the other way.
A spinorama in the National Hockey League?
They're not even spinoramas. Denny Savard did the spinorama where he would continue to move forward while he spun around the guy, like jamming on the brakes at the top of the crease and sprinting in place is not a spinorama. God, I'm just so mad about Donald Trump. That's all this is. It's all just coming out of me this way. It's just.
There's also a thing about, by the way, Vegas is going to unleash their colors and stuff. And I got to tell you right now, it's starting to feel, it's beginning to look a lot like Desert Nights.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
So what are the colors?
According, the Sin Bin had a memo from the team.
Oh.
And on the memo, the colors were very distinctly gold,
yeah.
Red, some silver. That could be Silver Knights with all those colors in it, but if gold is that prominent, I don't think they'd be the Silver Knights, because they can't be the Golden Knights. I wouldn't be surprised if they were the Desert Knights.
What the fuck's a Desert Knight?
Obviously, someone who plays at the only guy who plays the Excalibur.
And also, oh God, this is another thing that's so stupid too, is they've been holding out on this for months, and they're finally going to release it. When did they release it? The day before everybody travels for Thanksgiving to go home and stuff. It's the Tuesday before, like, the Wednesday home to go see all your high school friends at the bar. Like, no right. one, that's the, I don't know if that's the worst day to really, and it's like at 4:30 too. You've had so much time to do this. Why would you not do it at like Monday at like 1 o'clock on like a week where it's a 5 day work week? Why would you pick that organization? Greg, hold me, Greg.
I'm trying.
Oh, that feels good. Oh yeah, right there.
Finally, another Vegas thing from the GMs. Concern that Vegas would take advantage of the 48-hour window before the expansion draft in June to quietly agree to terms on a deal with a pending unrestricted free agent rather than wait until July 1st to sign him, so as to pluck another player off a team's roster in the expansion draft. Now,
wait.
Yes.
Explain that?
This would circumvent the rule that if a team loses a free agent to Vegas in the 48-hour free agent signing window, it cannot lose another player in the expansion draft.
Bullshit.
Some
Fuck
GMs,
off, GMs
worry that veteran GM George McPhee would take advantage of this situation. McPhee wisely worries that a team or two might do a drawer deal, this is all from ESPN, with a pending UFA, but not officially sign it until after the expansion draft. Why? Because teams don't have to protect pending free agents because they aren't eligible for the expansion draft.
I see. There's a lot of mistrust on both sides about signing and not having guys sign yet.
But I don't understand why it's mistrust in the sense that, like, obviously teams are going to make it a thing with their players to not sign until after the expansion draft. I mean, I thought that was obvious, right? Like, why is that news?
No, but he's saying that like they'll leave guys like that who they know they're not going to draft, so that it clogs up guys that you would draft, right? That's the argument.
Well, McPhee's worries that they might do a deal with the UFA to not sign before the expansion draft, but after it. But who in their right mind is going to sign a player before the expansion draft if they don't have to? It's stupid, right? Like I thought that was assumed. Yeah. Like if you have UFAs, you just assume that they're not going to. You don't have to worry about losing them. Unless they get signed by Vegas in that 48-hour window. I know it's confusing.
No, I see what you're saying, though. Yeah. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I would just let George McPhee do whatever he wants because he's probably going to fuck it up anyway. So.
Oh, Oh, how dare you, sir.
Burn. I know you love Georgie.
I do, and I feel like they're going to... And you and I, as you know, hardcore...
You and I you, both
hardcore Puxy listeners know that... I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm going
dog,
Jim Rome here.
Dog.
Dear Jim.
Jim.
I think Vegas is going to be an abject disaster. Signed, D. Lozo. Rack 'em. I think that Vegas is going to be good, and you think they're going to be shitty.
There's no way they're going to be good. There's no way they're going to be good. We should do that 1 week. We should come in with like, because they actually, wait, have they released what the official protected lists are?
We know what they can be, but we don't know what they will be until after the season.
Because we could probably sit down and come up with teams.
We'll do an official.
Based on, and they're going to make you sad.
We'll do it if
they're going to be
Canuck-esque. Or sod. based on how things are going. By the way, I really hope Columbus falls off the cliff because I don't want to have to praise Tortorella at some point.
They're not good. Their PDO is like through the roof, and their possession, they're at like 47%. That's not gonna. I mean, unless Sergei Bobrovsky wins the MVP, but
Johnny Gaudreau broken finger. Flames are cooked.
Cooked.
Yeah.
Flames cooked.
Flames cooked.
Signed. Gee wish.
Problem with the Flames though is that every time they look down, the Canucks are going to be underneath them, which sounds sexier than it is.
I was going to say, yeah. Get the Canucks underneath the Flames. Oh yeah, ride that one out, big boy. That's the stuff. The Oilers are actually starting to shit the bed too. That whole division is so
all right.
bad.
Cam Talbot started out 7-1-0 with a .934 save percentage. Cam Talbot has now gone 1-6-1 with an .897 save percentage. And the only thing I can think of is it's all Adam Larson's fault.
I mean, that guy just does not know how to play D. I mean, let's look at the records. Taylor Hall's team is 8-3-3, and the Oilers are what, 9-6-1?
Wait, Dave Staples from the Edmonton Journal points. Legitimately cited.
Oh yeah, you were mad online.
Taylor Hall is 10 points in 10 games, and he's like, "Hey, Edmonton fans, you might be upset about the entire season going right down that big fucking toilet. It always goes down."
While they're still in first place, by the way.
But look, well, second place now. The Ducks are in front of them as we do this podcast. Nail Yakupov, he's going to be in Russia. Look at Taylor Hall. He hasn't scored a goal in a while.
Taylor Hall's still on pace for basically what he scores every year, like 28, 29 goals.
Like, you have Connor McDavid. Don't give a shit about, like, let Taylor Hall be Taylor Hall. This isn't going to be a Boston cravenly looking at Tyler Seguin thing. Because Edmonton had a better player than Taylor Hall on the roster. It's not like Boston's looking there and be like, what could have been? Look at this stupid fucking Swede we got. Oh, he's so boring and so nice. He's so dumb and I hate him. And look what he's doing in Texas.
You're so protective of your good boy, Adam Larson. You miss him.
Listen,
such a sweet kid.
I don't dislike Adam Larson as opposed to the city of Washington, D.C. But, like, I just have a problem inherently, philosophically, with that trade at all times. Because it comes down to, like...
For
hockey. Like, because it comes down to being, like, if you're in the draft and you have a top three pick and you're like, should we take the best player available? Or do I need a right-handed shot defenseman who might be second pairing?
So you don't like to fill the need.
I don't like
need.
Drafting for need, man. I like drafting best players.
So when you're, like, doing your fantasy football draft, you'll take 6 running backs your first 6 picks because those are the best guys available? Come on, Wish. Come on.
I ain't going to take a wide receiver anymore the way things gone this season. I'll definitely be taking a quarterback.
Hey, do you remember when you said the Jets were going to beat all the teams in the AFC East? And
I had a real plan for that, and they lost the Dolphins. Tony Siragusa and I did a video together today at Yahoo, and I asked him, I'm like, so what do you think the Jets should do? And he just kind of gives me that look that says, like, well, I don't know, probably contract the team.
just quit.
I said, should we get Romo? And he's like, yeah, you know what? I think you should get Romo. He's like, I think Romo has something to prove. And you got enough guys on offense where you might be able to work with him. The thing is that the O-line blows, and then the D defensive secondary is atrocious, and they probably have to move Revis to safety if he doesn't retire.
Speaking of Romo, can I just for a second talk about what happened yesterday? Where
here comes Dave Lozo, hater of all things good, to talk about a gracious moment in life.
The entire internet pleasured itself to Tony Romo doing the bare minimum he had to do at the moment, which was just say, yeah, Dak Prescott's the quarterback of the Cowboys. Yeah, no shit, Tony. We figured this out 4 weeks ago. The fact that he didn't go up on the podium and say, I'm better than Dak Prescott. I'm totally like because he wasn't the quarterback from the replacements who tried to beat up Keanu Reeves every time he walked out the door. that suddenly made him the greatest person of all. Like, oh my God, Tony Romo, he's all class. What was he gonna do? Like, was he gonna go up on stage with like flow charts? Well, here's what the record would be. I'd be 9-0, and Dak is only 8-1. Let's just talk about the facts here, fellas. I should be like, no. He went up on stage and said, Dak Prescott's his team. He's the quarterback. He's better right now. He's better for the team. He was never going to say any. Like, you could not have set the bar lower for the hours of Tony Romo love that I had to endure on Twitter yesterday. And it's just like imagine if I were to hold a press conference after Seal married Heidi Klum, and I was like, look, Seal's better for Heidi Klum than I am. You know, I'm going to step down and go into the shadows here and just let those two. They make a better team than I do. You, wow, Dave. What an honorable thing Dave did there. Fucking jackasses. So anyway, hockey.
No, that was a real Chris Rock, you're supposed to take care of your kids kind right. of moment, right? Like, it's like, congratulations. You did exactly what you should do in that situation. You should be rewarded for it.
Fucking Christ, man. Like, you were... He's 8-1. It's not like
sports. Yeah. I'm just fried on stupid sports last year.
It's ever. Okay, honey. Sports are an escape, as you know, until Trump shows up at his first Capitals game and he's like, TJ Oshish would be on the second line of Trump team. Sad.
This Ovechkin guy is the worst. He's gotta go back to what's that, Vladimir? Oh, he should play all the games? Okay. Yeah. I don't know why my Trump is Babcock for some
it's
reason.
It's fine. It's
gonna get my kids some security clearance.
Yep.
110%.
Gotta get the David Duke endorsement.
What's up? Gonna hike up the taxes for the middle class. 110%.
I don't know how government works. I thought I didn't understand how any of this was.
I sympathize with Trump and his team being completely overwhelmed by how government works. Because I've often thought about, like, I've had those moments where I'm like, just put me in charge of the hockey team. I could do it. And then I think about the minute I walk into the GM's office and I sit down and it's like, sir, the scouts are wondering exactly what you're supposed to do now. I'm like, I don't know, go watch some hockey games. Yeah, that's what they do whenever I see him in the press box.
Just go pick an arena that has some ice on it and go watch the guy skate around.
Sir, your second line winger in the American Hockey League needs an option picked up on his contracts or else the escrow percentage. I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to go.
Let me tell you right now, okay? I've heard from some really smart people that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Sir, we should have a powwow about what to do with the big expansion draft. I told you all, I'm smarter than all of you. I know, Sean Lee is my day on Donald Trump. All right, we have a special guest come in and we'll be right back.
Callan Kavener is the bassist for The Story So Far, which is a band that you may have heard of. Did a Warped Tour thing, yes?
Yeah, we just finished Warped Tour.
And then you played here in the New York area, which is good.
We just played the PlayStation Theater. We're on tour right now with Good Charlotte for another week, I think. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been out with them. So
how are the brothers? All right,
the brothers. Yeah, they're a little reclusive, just in the sense that they like. Mm-hmm. I mean, they haven't toured in a long time, and they really cherish having like days off on tour, and they fly home and see their families.
Oh yeah, the lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Of the rich and
apparently.
The famous. Yeah, yeah.
So,
exactly. So
good reference.
No, they're really nice people. They just are very busy. So
they're good people.
Yeah, they're good. They're good.
They're good.
They're not. It's not shitty, Charlotte.
No, it's
yeah.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. Yeah, they haven't toured in a while. I didn't realize they just stopped performing, or they stopped making albums.
Yeah, they just stopped. I think they just got, I actually learned a lot just from doing this tour about them, things I didn't know, but they host The Voice in Australia.
Shut
so
the
they're like, I know. So they're like A-list celebrities in Australia, and they do that show over there. And then, they live in LA otherwise, and just, they have families and, that's kind of their whole shtick, but I had idea.
So can we get the Maroon 5 going, mate?
No. Yeah.
Wait, can we go over to Australia and become A-list people?
I guess that's how it works.
Have you ever thought about whether we're A-list people somewhere in the world?
No, I'm not.
I often think that. I often think that, like, if we went to some place, like, Helsinki.
No.
Like, we have no, because we don't look at the Helsinki iTunes numbers.
No, nowhere. Nowhere would we go.
That happens a lot.
No.
Not with podcasts, with bands.
Yeah.
Certain bands are like, well, it's like the Hasselhoff theory, right? Like where he's...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Hasselhoff was huge in Germany.
There was a mall we went to. Is he from Austria? Is that where he's from?
Who, Hasselhoff?
Yeah, Hasselhoff.
I don't know where his family's originally from, but like he became like a huge celebrity in Germany where he like sang on the fucking wall.
He sang on the goddamn Berlin Wall.
So there was a mall we went to when we were touring Europe. I don't remember where it was. It was from his hometown, I think. And we're walking through and it had like the stars, like the star walk, but every star was just Hasselhoff star. Each one was dedicated to him, but like some role or some show or something that he performed
like
in.
Each Baywatch season.
It was like, it was like Hollywood, but just for Hasselhoff.
His Nick Fury movie, his cameo in the SpongeBob movie, all captured in perpetuity.
Exactly.
Maybe we can do that. Maybe we can like go to Germany and like do the podcast like on the Rhine. River there?
I figure we'd have to go to a country that has an established soup. So like Puck Borscht. If we went to St. Petersburg, for example.
Right, right. Like do something at the Kremlin, maybe.
Oh, yeah. The Kremlin. They love us there. That was destroyed in Mission Impossible.
Oh, but they've rebuilt it. Yeah. They have four.
Four was Ghost Protocol. Five was Rogue Nation. Four was when he was rescued from the prison. And five was the thing with the opera house with Rebecca Hall.
This is good content.
Sorry, anyway. Kellen's a Sharks fan, a Sharks fanatic. And one of the beefs that people have with this podcast, one of the few, besides our leftist leanings and tangents and the inability to actually cover hockey, is that we have too many Easterners on, too many Rangers fans, too many Islanders fans. We reach across the country and bring you here to talk about the San Jose Sharks. Yeah,
and tell us all about why New York sucks.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, New York's unfair in that they dissed off all of their picks and whatnot and then decide a bunch of really good college free agents. So it's like they get the...
How bullshit is that?
It's bullshit, right? They were supposed to be this old withering team. Like that was the only thing I heard out of New York was all my friends were like, oh, thanks for Dan Boyle. Thanks for getting the last good years out of him. And we're like, yeah, I mean, I love Dan Boyle. He was great on the Sharks, but you know, like that's how for the last however many years I thought of New York was just this aging, you know, dying roster. And somehow they exhumed that.
I'm glad you brought that up. I feel like that's an underreported aspect of this whole Rangers Renaissance thing that's happening is that I mean, a lot of people thought they were just going to be a withered roster, but you're right in the sense that it goes beyond that. It's they mortgage their future for a present that never happened.
Yeah.
They haven't had a first-round pick or a number one pick in like 5 years.
Yeah.
They just keep stealing like Kevin Hayes and Jimmy VC.
Hayes and VC. Right.
Maybe since Doug Waite. I think it was their last first-round pick. The last one they had.
You know, I think you feel a little bit like guilty because you as a San Jose celebrity should have been tweeting at Jimmy VC to say, Turtle, you could have been come play in San Jose. San Jose's awesome. It is awesome.
I thought they were done when they traded for Yandel. I was like, oh, there goes all their, you know, their picks and everything. Yeah. And nope, they just signed VC and everything seems to be fine. And for whatever reason, they're just putting in five goals every night. So
yeah. So have you, speaking of teams that are old and falling apart.
The Sharks.
I was just kidding. How much joy are you deriving from the struggles of the Los Angeles Kings so far this season?
I was just going to say, so I'm just waiting for Dustin Brown to go down, which I'm not wishing any like fatal, you know, I still hold a grudge against him for ruining Hurdle's knee. I feel like he hit his knee and then put a time capsule in it. So when the finals came around, you know, when they were playing the pins and his knee started aggravating him, I hold that against Dustin Brown and blame that.
So you believe Dustin Brown surgically implanted a small timed explosive in Tomas Hurdle's knee.
I think he did.
I buy it. I kind of buy it.
Yeah. Actually, it seems more of a Corey Perry type of move.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of people in that division that I don't like.
It's a division of some loathsome individuals.
I always refer to him as that. Who is that figure skater that bashed the...
Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, yeah.
Is Corey Perry?
Dustin Brown is the Tonya Harding of the NFL.
Right. I would say... Yeah. Okay.
So who's Nancy Kerrigan?
Thomas Hurdle.
Right. Thomas Hurdle, yeah.
Which makes...
Just this innocent, young, like... Just happy
Drew Doughty, Jeff Galooly.
Better than her. Better than him. Yeah.
And makes Andrei Kopitar Oksana Baiul in the sense that he is now better than Tonya Harding because she fell off the map.
Right.
Yeah, and he's the pretty girl now.
So he's gone, right? How long is he out for? Kopitar.
Is Kopitar? No, he's
injured, right?
He's a little bit banged up.
I think he just started skating today.
Yeah.
So first went quick.
I thought
he
came back, but I think you're probably right.
Our guest knows more about the current.
Our guest is our first like West Coast guest that we've had.
Yeah, I know, right?
And he's going to find out that we really don't watch a lot of West Coast.
I'm not here to do the podcast. I'm just here to inform you guys everything that's been happening on the other side of the country.
He's like an emissary from the West. He's like, I bring you tidings and news of the Western Conference, sir.
Tell us about this Seattle franchise that's happening.
I know. Yeah, right. The one that should have happened, but
they doth not the Phoenix Coyotes anymore, good fellows. They doth the Arizona Coyotes. No, but like I thought originally you were going to be talking about Dustin Brown because I find, like, listen, Dustin Brown in some ways, although a deplorable player who plays on the edge and frequently crosses it, yeah. I find to be sort of a sympathetic character for a couple reasons. The first is that he was summarily mocked by Sean Avery while he was there to the point where he actually like got a stutter from it or some shit. The other thing, too, is that he got married or at least met his wife real young. And the story you always hear from the Kings players is that he wasn't really one of the boys because he was a family guy like really early. And I kind of felt bad for him because of that. Like, what are you going to do? You meet a lady, you can't go out and do whatever it is Drew Doughty does at night.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, just because he doesn't fit in with the boys doesn't mean he has to take it out on Tomas Hertl, you know?
Right, he sees like Tomas Hertl's young future and his freedom.
Like envy, yeah, or something.
But but the other thing about it too that I've always felt about Dustin Brown is that like he was named captain, but honestly was, what, the single most disrespected captain in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, I mean, next to Gianta, he was kind of the most like, why is he the captain?
Right,
yeah.
Right, well, then, and Ovechkin, because people were like, well, he can't even lead his team to the second round.
Andy Green.
Yeah. Well, oh, you leave Andy Green out of this. He was captain by default, because Patrick Elliott was like...
I don't want to be captain. That's responsibility.
But I always felt bad for Dustin Brown in the sense that, like, you know, The minute they start winning, it's all like, oh man, the leadership of Kopitar, the leadership of Doughty. Yeah. Boy, Mike Richards comes in. He was a captain, and Dustin Brown's like, guys, I'm over here. I have pouty lips. So I always felt bad, but at the same time, I always felt like he was an incredibly injurious player, and I wonder where he'll eventually go now that he's become a cap problem.
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Maybe Vegas, right?
Maybe, yeah.
All right.
Well, not a good place for a family man.
So. What do you think about Vegas getting a team, by the way?
You know, the first thing I thought of was you already have – I mean, these players tend to gravitate towards Vegas. You know, they're off time just to, like, party or do whatever. And you think, like, you insert a team there and you have athletes coming through. Like, I just imagine all the stories and scandals that are due to come out of a team in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great.
There's a part of me that believes they're going to be on their best behavior. Then there's a part of me that's like – there's a club in Vancouver where they all go, regardless. Mm-hmm. And now you have an entire city that's going to be that club.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You got guys like Evander Kane who have, like, they have property there. You know what I mean? It's like, I know Thornton likes to gamble there, too. It's like, these guys just, it's like, they don't even have to make a reason to go to Vegas. They're just going to be there.
Oh, God, that first photo of one of those guys, like, this team lost that night, and then they have, like, a layover or whatever, and he's playing the tables at, like... The Bellagio at like 3. Oh, God, that's going to be like
it's gonna be a
gold.
Jarrett Stahl's like dealing drugs to all the players that come to town. They're like, come by the pool, meet me 2 o'clock. Just give me the little handshake. I'll take care of it.
Yeah, but our luck, a player will be Jager, and everybody's like, oh, of course. Man, what are we going to do?
He can do whatever he wants.
Seriously, he's kind of.
I saw there's a picture. I was going down the rabbit hole of finding photographs of former presidents with the NHL, because I wanted to find the last president to attend a Capitals game, as mentioned earlier in the podcast. It was Clinton in 98.
Yeah.
And I found a picture of Clinton meeting Jager, and there's a Marine that's kind of over on the side, kind of looking forward, and the mullet is like right by the Marine's face. And I'm just like, it must be like those big fuzzy hat guys in front of Buckingham Palace. Like, he's probably not supposed to look.
Yeah.
Just wants to touch it.
At one point, he just wants to pet it.
He just wants to be,
just to braid it.
To experience glory for just a moment.
Do you hate the Ducks or the – you have to hate the Kings more, right?
I hate the Kings, yeah. No, I mean, that's a team that I actually hate.
Right.
The Ducks are kind of – they're just one of those teams that I can never quite take seriously just by the mere fact that they became a franchise because of a Disney movie. And, like, that's cool. And, like, you know, like, their original jerseys and things were pretty cool. And, like, they've
come around again. Like, people thought they were terrible and embarrassing – and the colors were terrible. And then, like...
They made worse ones.
They made worse
ones, everything else. Much like everything else, it came back around again.
But I respect players like Solani and, you know...
But you have to hate the Kings more.
I hate the Kings way more.
What they've done to you.
I know. And so that was...
Personally.
It was... Even though we didn't win the Cup this year, it was definitely fulfilling to just kind of embarrass them at home. And
just...
And take them out of the playoffs. And finally, and, you know, just looking at their forward depth right now and just... It feels so warm to just look at that depleted roster. Just
Dwayne King on the first line.
How did you
Setaguchi or whatever?
Yeah, Setaguchi. So this guy over here thought Setaguchi was going to score 30 goals. He was a -4 last night in that game that they lost.
Plus minus isn't a good stat.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they need players because, I mean, just look at, you know, just because of due to injury and everything.
But, well, and also like they gave their goalie a lifetime contract, and He's the kind of goalie that is super flexible, but that means that his tendons might be weaker.
And he's a gonna dick, be const- too.
He's a
did I ever tell you the story about the time Jonathan Quick was a dick to a reporter for no reason?
No, was the reporter you?
No, it wasn't. Oh, if it was me, it would make sense. I'm an asshole. It was after a Devils game, and Kopitar had like a three-point night, and he just says to Jonathan Quick, looking for a quote about Kopitar, he goes, you know, if Kopitar keeps playing like this, do you guys feel like you can climb back into the playoff race? And the guy just goes, this stupid fucking question to a person we both know.
He said that. Quick said that?
Everyone has their nights, I feel. I mean, yeah. It is rude, but, you know, you never know.
Are you happy that you don't have to face any media after your performances?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine.
Talk about that first set.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's the same way. It's just so redundant. Like, all those interviews, they always say the same thing.
They
are. Like, oh, I just got to, you know, move the puck more. It's the same thing every time. And I don't know, but he's a hothead. Like, Quick always seems to be losing his temper over...
Yeah,
just very trivial things, and
he's always breaking sticks.
But that was endearing the first time they won the cup, and then he showed up, and he was just like a dick, and he was like cursing on Mike and inside of Staples at the celebration. Remember that?
And now it's like, oh, this is just kind of who he is.
Yeah, it's kind of who he is. And he had the kid with him that one time too, that really took the edge off of things. Where his little daughter.
If I was
like,
an athlete, I would be a dick all the time and hold my kid up right in front of me the whole time, so you can get mad at me.
Yeah,
be like, fuck all you media people. He's like, oh,
yeah, look, she's grabbing the mic.
Yeah.
How did you let the light of hockey into your heart as a Sharks fan, as a young lad?
So this is actually kind of funny because I've seen you go back and forth with him on Twitter before, but
oh shit!
So this is a small world. This is a small world, especially now.
His name is Deplorable Phil. He has a frog as an avatar.
No, but you know Dylan Burke.
Yeah,
you're at least familiar with him. Like he was my neighbor when I was a kid.
Really?
We grew up together through elementary school, and so he being from Vancouver, BC, introduced me to hockey. And I remember wanting to play when I was a kid, but, you know, it's in the Bay Area, it's kind of expensive. And to get ice time, you got to go into like Oakland, which is like 20 miles.
Now, were you the kind of, because the reason I never got into playing hockey besides the complete lack of athletic talent is that my friends never played. Like I didn't have anybody who I was like, so you at least had one person that was like into it. Would have been enough or did you need, do you think you'd be peer pressured to go do something else instead of hockey when you were a kid?
Well, so I ended up playing basketball. I loved basketball. I loved Karl Malone era, like Jazz. I loved Stockton Malone, like all those guys. I went to my first hockey game with Dylan. I remember that was like Nabokov was in that. It was, you know, it sounds like, because I'm pretty young compared to a lot of people that may be listening to this podcast.
He's
like,
looking at us.
I'm looking at you guys, yeah. I'm just creeping back into my chair, just scared that you guys are going
to
bring out my youthfulness. But
full head of hair, it's beautiful. Oh, God, this hurts so much. Yeah. Tell your story about your youth that's still going on.
Okay. So, yeah, we play like street hockey and stuff, and he got me, you know, first exposure to hockey, and then... after that, you know, I discovered music, quit sports, went through the whole, like, oh, sports is for jocks, like, screw that shit kind of phase, and went through that void of, you know, I wasn't really invested in sports. But come high school, you know, like, I started watching the Sharks again, and actually started getting into statistics, like, when I selected a major, I went to 3 years of college before I dropped out. And I did.
That could be a lesson for all of you.
I know.
Three,
yeah.
Three
so,
years
yeah.
of it, though. Oh man.
3 years of economics statistics major. So when I was doing, you know, like projects and stuff, I was always choosing hockey and like doing stuff with like stats, and like that actually made me more invested in it.
Like then, what in particular? Like what would be an example of that?
My God, that's been like 6 years from now. So you know, it would just be
so
like
so long ago.
Would it be more like business side of things, or would it be more like on ice events?
On ice events.
Okay.
But it's a tough statistical sport because there's so much, you know, randomness that occurs in hockey and so much kind of like unknown and whatnot. So it was very simple things, you know, like these players based on, you know, very simple stats, like, you know, could have been goalies, like, you know, save percentages, that kind of stuff, just like simple things. But it was just like makes you invested in the players and like monitoring what's going on around the league.
So you are a living, breathing example of stats being an entry point to hockey.
Yeah.
Because the argument's been made time and time again by the analytics community that like the more information you put out there, you're going to attract fans who may not necessarily like hockey, but they like numbers and they like info, and they're going to find that as an entry point. And you were like, you're the fucking outbreak monkey.
But liked hockey before that, though. You weren't.
I did, but it was.
But it rekindled this passion for
it.
The
but
numbers
it was.
Did.
It made. I think it made me more invested in it as opposed to just being like a casual fan when I was looking at like players and I started playing fantasy. Which I didn't play this year, but for the last 2 years, you know, reigning champ for the last 2 years. But
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Backdoor brag.
some will argue the first year that there was a little bit of collusion, but there wasn't. So
a bit of a pre-playoff player dump that happened to end up on your roster,
maybe. But
I don't know it.
But yeah, no, like that kind of stuff keeps you very focused on what's going on around the league and which players are trending and who's kind of like fluky versus you know, someone's gonna like a legitimate like scoring streak or that kind of stuff. So like,
so you're totally a fancy stats guy.
A little bit. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't say I am as invested in that side of it now that I'm out of school, but like I still monitor and, you know, I read Dauber and do that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
you know, so that's, I'd say a little more than like a casual fan. Like I try to keep track of, you know, which players are doing what.
So like, how mad do you get when Brian Burke goes on TV or on the radio or whatever and says, fancy stats are stupid. You don't need stats to judge players. Like how, like, are you like at a 10 where you will fight on Twitter for 9 hours about it? Or are you like at a 1 where you're just like,
I'll never fight on Twitter. That's Ever. Just, no, I won't get caught in that hole. I mean,
me neither.
I've upset sports Twitter before, and it's just like, you get the most, it's just, oh, yeah. That's a flat out, yeah.
It took a second.
But,
wait, give me an example of when sports Twitter came after you. What did you do? What did you say? Like,
it was during the Nashville series, and I said something where I was like, it was the Pavelski goal that was controversial, and it should have been a goal.
Oh, the one that got waved off.
Yeah, and they should have won the series, and I was like, I was like, man, that should have been a goal or whatever. Like, and then all these people from Nashville were like, no, it ain't supposed to be a goal. Like, oh my God. Like, it's one of those franchises where it's like the people, like, you know, they're very well intentioned and they love the sport and it's actually doing really well over there. But like, I don't think a ton of them really, cause I'm like, well, like there's these stats and things and like these rules, blah, blah, blah. They're just like, oh man, like the guy put the goal in the net. So it's like, it's fair is fair, you know what I mean? It's like that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to go on and try to explain to people that don't care to hear
woke
that.
Woke up with a catfish head in your bed.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like Godfather, you know?
That's good. As a musician, to piss off a place called Music City, that's probably,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Probably a good career move.
So this one dude was like, I don't know, I can't remember what he said. I had a little fun with it, but it was like, then, you know, just tons of people just start jumping on like, sore loser, blah, blah. It's like, oh my God, I don't care that much. Like, I'm sorry. Just, you know. Should have been a goal, that's all.
Kellen's Twitter feed is one of the reasons why Lozo wanted him on the show, because his handle is Kellen Keller 38.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, I was like, done.
But your current banner photo is Joe Thornton walking shirtless through the streets of Pittsburgh. How much love do you have for Jumbo Joe?
For
is
Jumbo?
Your favorite player or no?
He's my favorite player by far.
He's
great. He's got a great character and he's just like, I mean, anyone who's watched him play knows he's an incredible playmaker and he's God's gift to the NHL and he's the future. He's a future Jager-esque player where I think he'll play into, he's timeless. He'll play into the infinity.
It doesn't seem like he's going to go away. Like it seems like this is the end for Marlowe in San Jose most likely.
Yeah, right? I would say so. It's but always like, been like every year it's like, oh, he's going to get traded. But yeah, this is finally, you know, with the contract expiring.
So before they obviously got their shit together and played for the cup and everything, there were those years where everybody was like, should they trade Marlowe and Thornton? And Marlowe and Thornton are like, fuck you guys. We got no move clauses and the beach is right here.
Yeah.
And then like, were you more in the Doug Wilson camp of like, hey, these guys should waive so we can start rebuilding? Or were you like, no, man, like they're not the problem?
Yeah, I was. Thornton especially was not the problem. Right. I think people were just quick to blame him and just having the captaincy. And again, it's just people that, I'm not going to go explain, like, look at his stats. So he's not bad. People are just like, he's not being a good captain. Like, yeah, he's, you know, like the players are losing, the team's losing. So he must, like, not know what he's doing. But I think it was a relief to have DeBoer come in and finally give those guys some rest and just, like, change things in, like, the, you know, the hierarchy a little bit.
From the sound of things about DeBoer, and this was the way it was when he was at the Devils, too. It's like, he opened up the lines of communication in that room in a way that they hadn't been open before. And it really kind of like, they had to kind of like, they crapped out of the playoffs and were sort of a disastrous place and McClellan goes, the whole thing.
Yeah.
They needed someone to kind of like get in there and be like, you know what? It's a good room. You just need to kind of like, we need to get over our shit. And it seemed like the right guy to do that.
Totally. And you know, the thing that everyone was worried about was he apparently had some reputation for kind of putting young players like in the doghouse.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the sense that he was doing that at all. And the team seemed to do well just because of the rest. Like, it sounded like McClellan was pushing veteran players very hard, not giving them a lot of rest where, you know, you got guys like, you know, Thornton who are established players. They don't necessarily need all those days to like, you know, practice, maybe just kind of like let their bodies recoup because they're not 23 anymore, you know? So That was probably helpful, I imagine.
Now, Logan Couture has always fascinated me as a player because I feel like he doesn't really... I feel like he's such a little rink rat, junior achiever club guy on a team where everybody just wants to sit around and have a beer and put their hands in their pants and watch like Lebowski. Yeah. And it feels like he's going to... They're all in the room on the couch, maybe smoking something, watching Lebowski, and Logan's in the other room, like
on the bike.
On the bike diagramming. Yeah. Yeah. But like on the bike diagramming plays. Like I get that sense.
No, that's a good point. I think he's right. I think he's more who's the actress who's also like a model who's always naked all the time and she's like super hot and he was like trying to pick her up on Twitter.
Selena Gomez? Or no, I don't know. I know
she was in Gone Girl.
Oh, you mean the one that was in the Word Lines video?
Actually, so don't spoil it. I said I'm reading that right now, so don't spoil it.
No, did you see the movie?
I didn't see it, no.
You mean the one that was in the Word Lines video? Emily Ratajkowski?
Yes,
or whatever name was? He's trying to pick her up
all the time. Like if you search like
he's funny because he seems like kind of what would have been a kind of an awkward guy growing up maybe, but like obviously he's like a star player, so he's coming to this position of
he's just shooting a shot every day on Twitter. Just I gotta just try to pick up every single. He also tweeted a link to like Pornhub once by accident.
That was true. Yeah, it was funny because there's this one interview with him too. It was regarding Selena Gomez, and they're like, you know, she's only like this old, right? And he's like, yeah. It was just really awkward, like, yeah, I think she's really, like, kind of a gorgeous woman.
Saw her parading around in that Jets jersey with Bieber. He had it all about it. He always struck me as being – it's funny that he had beef with Crosby because they kind of seem like the same guy. Like, a guy who was probably really, really good young and then thrown into the hockey life, maybe a little sexually repressed as a kid, and now he's famous, he's got some money and whatever. And then, like, inherently just, like, super serious about his craft in a way that maybe his teammates aren't. It's always how he struck me.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I mean, I don't know. But I guess it would be nice to have that kind of guy on your team. I could see there being an age, because there are a lot of veteran players on San Jose. So if, like, you're trying to relate to these older guys and you're into guys, you know, like Drake or something. And, like, guys, I doubt guys like Thornton and Marlo are listening to Drake.
But doesn't every band have the come on guys, we got to rehearse guy? Like, don't they need, every band need that guy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you kind of need that guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean,
are you that guy?
I'm not. I'm just the bass player. I got the easiest job in the world. I show up when I need to, and otherwise, I don't want to admit I'm expendable.
We got calendar backing track tonight. Backing track. Oh shit! All right.
Exactly. That's the only way that this podcast was possible, was the backing track. So. Yeah.
Oh, do you own any jerseys?
I do actually. I have a big. I collect a lot of jerseys, but not only those, but just kind of weird, quirky, like eBay finds. Like I have, for instance, this starter denim jacket that's just the goofiest looking thing.
Pretty
but
sharks?
It's got shark. Yeah, it's like got sharks print all over it. And I was like,
denim?
I was like, man, this is gonna be the lucky ticket for game six of the finals. So it was even more humiliating when I'm sitting there, just a dumb denim jacket, just watching Phil Kessel raise the cup. And people are throwing hot dogs on the ice.
Any like, what was the feeling about the Penguins when they won? Was it respect? Was it like, hey, you guys deserve it? Or were you like, just fuck you guys?
So, no, honestly, I'd never actually witnessed a team win a championship. And that's kind of like, regardless of if your team loses or not, I guess, like,
it's a great moment.
It's a cool thing to witness. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, I'd hope the Sharks would have won. But
were you in the building or not?
I was in the building,
In the jacket?
In the jacket. Wow. That's why I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, wow. Where's that jacket now?
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of it. But what was I saying? So it actually wasn't a terrible feeling because before the series, I'd even told my friend, I was like, Penguins are going to win this. I mean, like we said, Dustin Brown plants this time capsule in Hurdle's knee. He goes out. So their depth was, he was also like showing up too. Like he was kind of like finding his place in the playoffs, and losing him didn't help at all, especially against a really fast team with a lot of depth that was Pittsburgh.
Right.
So I kind of, in my mind, was, as much as I wanted the Sharks to win, I came to reason. I was like, the Penguins are going to win this series, but still it's been a fun ride. They're in the finals. So watching them win wasn't necessarily heartbreaking. It was like, oh man, like they put up a good fight. It was a really like thrilling ride to this point. But having witnessed the 3-0 comeback only a few years prior, that was devastating. So
yes.
I'd actually, someone had described it as watching your dad get his ass kicked. Like, there's nothing you can do. And like, I was probably one of 100 people that stayed to the very end of that game. I was in the building and my buddy was with me as a Kings fan. And even he just like, didn't even know what to say to me. That was demoralizing. And that was like, that was I was bummed.
And they almost did it against Detroit a couple years earlier. They're up 3-0. And they
Datsuk
won game 7.
In game 7, even, man, he had this backhand shot from the circle. I'll never forget. It like, tied the game. I remember just being like, oh, my God. Like, they're not going to blow this. You know what I mean?
But even then, they found a way to do it. So you never think it's going
to
happen.
Stay to the end. Wipe the blood off your dad's face. Dad.
Yeah.
We'll catch a ball game or something together.
Exactly.
It's
but
okay, Chief.
It was like watching your dad get his ass beat. And there's nothing you can do. And you're just sitting there like, oh, God, this is the worst thing I've ever been I feel terrible.
Before we get to some mailbag stuff, because we're going to keep you here for the mailbag this week. We don't usually do that with guests, but we're inviting you back to the couch like Carson.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
How do you keep hockey in your life on the road? You obviously are a professional. You are touring constantly. What do you do hockey-wise when you're on the road? You try to catch a game? Try to keep up with the Sharkies somehow? What do you do?
So my buddy actually has a game center login, so I'll watch games as often as I can, you know, just like
stealing
on my phone.
Stealing money out of the NHL.
Stealing money, I know.
It's
you know, my revenge in the fact that they black out all of the home games. So when I'm at home, I can't even, it's like worthless to me. So
I just had a discussion last night with somebody at a party about cord cutting, and that's one of the things that keeps me wary about it too, is the fact that I couldn't use NHL .tv to watch Devils games here.
Yeah,
because they block it out.
Exactly. So that's kind of. But I go to games. I saw the Minnesota Wild play the Sabres on this tour
in Minnesota.
Oh,
nice.
So they got a cool facility. I've been to a couple games at Pepsi Center. So
do you have a dream arena that you've not been to yet, or like a dream home game that you haven't seen yet?
You know what? I was really bummed. I missed out on a few years ago. We were in Detroit. And we weren't too far from Joe Louis, but we played at a really awkward time slot, so I couldn't quite make the game.
Right.
And the Sharks were in town that night. So it would have been awesome, right, to see the Sharks play Joe Louis and be in town in Detroit. But I ended up watching it just that, like, the venue had this bar. And it went to OT. It was a cool game, but I was like, man, that would have been such a cool game to catch with Joe Louis. You know, especially since it's going to become like Pizza Hut Palace or whatever. Like,
Little Caesars Palace.
Oh, sorry.
Crazy Bread Arena.
Little Caesars. We'll get the plug in here, right?
You got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we have a pizza sponsor.
Not yet.
Yet.
We could use one, you guys look like you have a pizza sponsor.
Oh, wow. Shit. Man, I'd come over there and kick your ass, but I feel like I'd be like the Sharks against the Kings.
Yeah.
All right. So, little mailbag. We love when people mail us tweets.
Yeah, I see the one question you have there.
Yeah, it's a good one. DJ Mitchell.
Oh, I was looking at the one above it.
No, that one will be there too. Let's do that one.
That was a bad one.
Yeah, DKM Hockey wants to know, why do you still say taped when we say we're taping Puck Soup? That's a great question.
Because it's just a word. We all know what it means. We don't have to say the specific.
Still say I'm taping Westworld so we can go have dinner.
Right.
Right, but that's just an anachronism from the days when it was taped.
Back in the day.
You watching Westworld, by the way?
I'm a few episodes behind, but yeah, that's like on this tour, that's what we've been watching. We always kind of have a show.
Lozo really didn't like it at first, but I could tell you've come around on it.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. I'm not giving up yet. I wouldn't say it's bad or anything. It's just you really have to, like when I'm on the road and like Game of Thrones is on, I'll watch it in the hotel room, and it's not the same thing. Like I'm not focused. I'm tired from a long day's work. So, like, I can't imagine watching Westworld because it involves so much focus.
It doesn't have me in the obsessive. Like, I think probably the last show I was obsessive about was Mad Men, as far as, like, I could not wait. Or The Affair, actually, was also like that, too, on Showtime. I could not wait for the next week. It's not there for me there either, but I think it's still pretty good.
I was just happy that my prediction from episode 2 was
Don't you dare.
Correct. You haven't seen last week's?
No, Tone hasn't. Our new friend hasn't seen it.
I'm not saying in front of him, but you've seen it?
I saw it, yeah.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. DJ Mitchell wants to know, one band you need to see live. We didn't even say you're on the show, and you get a fucking music question. One band you need to see live. One band that sucked live. One band you can't stand that everyone likes. Let's eliminate that last one. I just want to keep the live experience one. One band you need to see live. Good question. There was a time I probably would have said the Rolling Stones, but only with the benefit of a time machine and a small club in London.
Yeah, like I never want to tell anybody what to like music wise. That drives me nuts on Twitter. And people are like, "This album sucks." I love it's music. Like everyone likes their own thing. Like so, for me to say like, "Oh man, I love seeing Bruce Springsteen play live." Like if you don't like Bruce Springsteen, it's not going to do anything for you.
What's the best show you've ever seen?
I was just thinking about that.
Something on like Warped or something that played.
You know, I don't really. It was funny because when we did Warped, it was more something I enjoyed when I was young. But like this new cast of bands catered to younger. You know, a younger crowd, and like they're not necessarily bands I listen to. So.
Right.
Guys, I mean, I've been to a lot of shows. I'm trying to just kind of sort through them and figure out who.
Here, I'll do my worst one.
Okay.
You ever hear of an artist named Cat Power?
Yeah.
Worst concert I've ever seen.
Actually, speaking of worst, all right. So now it's coming to my mind.
She's enormously talented, but the show, she's got like a social anxiety thing. So like she would start playing a song and then she'd stop, and then she'd just start playing again and then stop, and then sigh deeply and then start playing it again, and everybody in the crowd's like, oh my god.
Oh, like her, Mackie Sasser couldn't throw the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
Pitcher.
They're like, oh god, her art. And I'm like, yeah. It's so, like the fucking record skipping. Like
art
it's terrible.
Sounds bad. Yeah. Why does art sound so bad?
What was the worst?
I saw the Yeah Yeah Yeahs at this festival, and I thought they were going to be awesome. And I don't know if it was just an off night for them, but it was so bad. And like at some point she was just like shoving the mic in her mouth and just like just making like guttural. Like,
but that's it. Again, it's like they're artsy fartsy NYU kids at heart, and they're all just trying to be like that instead of playing the good songs in the albums.
Sometimes it works though, like depending on the setting, like you're in a certain venue and like it's mixed well and like you can get some kind of like cool effect out of that. But like this, the way it was like in this amphitheater just sounded so bad.
I also feel like sometimes it hurts when you've seen a band a lot. Like I'm a Flaming Lips fan.
Yeah.
So I've seen them in different incarnations and at different venues and on different albums. And then like I saw them at a festival in New York. Uh-huh. It was the Smorgasbord, where the hell it's called, in Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's what it's called, the Smorgasbord in Brooklyn. Yeah,
yeah. So I saw them there and they were in there. It was right before they did the album with Miley Cyrus, and they just didn't give a shit. All the song, I'm like, oh, here comes the good song, and now they've decided to slow it down by 35% to 40%, and it was terrible. Mm. But that was in comparison to the better performances I had seen, where Wayne's walking over the crowd inside of a giant bubble and shit.
I've only seen U2 once live, and it was the worst fucking show I've ever seen.
Like which album though? Was it like Elevation? Oh,
God, it was like maybe like 10 years ago. They played at like Continental Airlines Arena.
Yeah,
and it was. Like it was like it
did
was,
they force did they force tickets upon you on your iPhone?
Yeah, I had to go. I had no choice.
Ticket, what was that? Didn't Ticketmaster like mess up and give a bunch of free tickets away or something?
It's possible.
No, it's because of the class lawsuit. Action lawsuit. Yeah. So like there's a bunch of like Live Nation stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's what you were referring to. Yeah. Just the free concert.
No, I was referring to them face fucking people by giving them their album whether they wanted it or not.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, the whole YouTube. Yeah, I mean they had their own iPods. I mean, yeah.
I can't believe you associate free album with getting fucked in the face.
Oh, sorry.
It's a free.
But I mean, it's you too. Bring you right to the edge. I'm sorry.
That was a bad pun.
That was really, really. I. Oh my god.
What is everything okay? Yeah.
A little winded.
Right to the edge. Is that because the edge is the guitarist?
Oh Jesus. You know what? I was trying to find the right pun, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
It's a good thing I do the show my pro bono.
Do it pro bono.
I do it pro bono.
He's so slick about it. I almost didn't pick up on the first one.
Oh, yeah, our puns are really great. Speaking of that, Tom Manning wants to know, your attempts at accents are terrible. Why do you continue to torture us with them, Dave?
Well, love, I don't quite know what you're talking about. Governor? Governor Tom Mannington? That's a great name to say with an accent, ain't it?
Tom's actually from the UK, and I'll say the same thing.
Oh, that's why he's mad.
Yeah, that's why he's always mad, because he's the guy who's like, when you're doing all that what's the soccer team you always talked about?
Leicester
City. He's like, he said that his ears bleed when you say it like that.
My ears are poppycock when you do your little accent, love.
The only accent I do well, besides Canada, obviously, because it's just basically kind of the northern part of the U.S. It's like Minnesota, but just like polite, more polite. I do New Zealand, and I can only do it by slowing it down.
How come nobody gets mad at what's her name?
Here we go, ready? This is a penguin. This is a kiwi. There you go.
Who's the Olsen sister from the
Elizabeth Olsen?
Who does the shitty accent in the last two movies?
Oh, from Russia? Yeah, yeah. Elizabeth Olsen. She plays Scarlet Witch.
Whatever she's doing, that, no one makes fun of her for that, but I get crap.
But she's from Sokovia. I mean, it's sort of a nation of indiscriminate origin.
Did you see that movie that just came out in New Zealand, Hunt for the Wilder People?
No, but it's the follow-up from the dude who did Taika Waititi, who did What We Do in the Shadows. Yeah,
it's really good.
Did you see What We Do in the Shadows?
Speaking of Kiwis.
So good.
That was my miserable.
Kiwis.
Do you have any accents you want to unleash upon us, Callan?
No.
perhaps a Walnut Creek native.
Oh, yeah.
And there it is.
He was doing the Nashville accent earlier.
Yeah, it was actually really good.
Unfortunately, you're probably going to get some pitchforks for that one.
We probably will.
Yeah.
Not us.
Chad wants to know, Chadwick on Twitter wants to know, thoughts on the movie Sudden Death, underappreciated hockey movie. It's interesting that you would term it a hockey movie, because I actually believe there are two different categories of hockey movie. You have actual hockey movies like Miracle and Goon and Slapshot, and then you have movies that have hockey in them, and I feel like Sudden Death straddles the two genres. It is inherently a hockey movie because the whole damn thing takes place in the igloo, but it's also a diehard movie with hockey in it.
I don't remember if it's good or not. I haven't watched it in like 20 years.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's great. He kills the Penguins mascot and a dish cleaner, and a helicopter falls through the top of the igloo.
He plays goalie at some point.
He does.
He sneaks on the ice and plays for like a minute.
How what percentage hockey would you say the movie is?
It's like 100% hockey because the whole thing takes place during the Stanley Cup final.
Oh, got it. Because I don't know if it's just a movie where it's like Big Daddy, where it's like it's a Rangers fan.
Or Chasing Amy's got hockey in it. Strange Brew's got hockey in it.
The Clerks has hockey.
The Love Guru is a hockey movie, unfortunately.
Why do you gotta bring that?
I went to the premiere.
Bring us all down, man?
I went to the premiere of The Love Guru in DC.
Did you?
Yeah, it was great. It was the most depressing.
It's Mike Myers, right?
Yeah, it was his, where he had a spiffy new character we were all very excited about, and it wound up being pretty terrible.
Myers, he's that new kid on the Maple Leafs, right?
There it is. Oh my God. I just looked over and I thought there was a guy eating hot chicken across from us.
Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
What an amazing thing. Do we have any more?
Anything else?
What happens first? Ryan O'Reilly in a Tim Hortons commercial or Evander Kane advertising ladies night at a local bar?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, that's
Christ.
Bad.
I would go Ryan O'Reilly for Tim Hortons because now Tom Brady has made the world safe for self-reference to Scandal now that he did that Deflategate commercial for Foot Locker.
You could do something funny out of that too, where it's like he just drives through the wall of Tim Hortons and he's like, hey, and they just hand him his beverage, you know what I mean?
So you're saying you should be the new Kool-Aid man.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh yeah, I almost killed the guy.
After a long day playing hockey and I'm tired and I need some caffeine, I go to Tim Hortons. I don't think either of those things should happen.
Yeah, that's about it, I think, as far as questions go.
Yeah, I think our man has to get out of here and do some art. He has to play some.
He needs to get the hell out of here and do his show.
I got to do some art, man.
All right, finally, Eduardo Razzo wants to know, when is it too early to put up Christmas decorations, asking for a friend? I did notice that when Glenn Beck was on CNN last night, he already had his Christmas tree up behind him, but that's because people are trying to steal Christmas from conservatives.
He looks like an extra or like a character in a Christmas movie.
The
way he was dressed for that interview with his little spectacles.
He looked like he should be reading a tale.
Yeah, he looked like he should. Yeah.
Can I tell you a secret, boys? I'll tell you right now. Ruby and I, my beloved that I married on Friday, have a game that we play.
Whoa.
I know this is going. I don't know. Forget.
She wears an elf. She's an elf, and I'm. You know.
it's a game where you turn on. Are you familiar with the Hallmark Movie Channel?
Yeah.
Okay. So right now they're in Christmas movie mode.
Oh yeah.
So this is a fun game. I hope everybody plays at home. Go to the Hallmark Movie Channel. Don't click on it because it's fucking terrible. But go to the names of the movies, which inherently are going to be like The Christmas Stocking or Joy at Christmas or The Christmas Dance or, you know, Jody McGillicuddy's Christmas Mysteries. And
Love that one.
Guess what you think the movie is based solely on the title.
Like the plot?
Yes. And I remember one from last night. So what do you think The Christmas Stocking is about, Dave Lozo?
The Christmas Stocking. Well, it's about a guy who he gets divorced from his wife, and then he just follows her everywhere throughout Christmas.
Look at the stocking on his head.
Stocking. I think it's stocking.
No, stocking. Oh, sorry. My Jersey accent.
Oh.
The Christmas Stocking.
I thought it was like a horror Christmas movie, you know?
Oh, man.
All right, The Christmas Stocking.
Fred's in the bushes. His ex-wife's in the house. Hijinks ensue.
Okay, it's an erotic tale where a woman wears stockings.
This is a Hallmark Christmas channel. I'll just tell you. This is honestly what it was. The Christmas Stocking was a movie where a woman lost her husband, and then she bought a magic stocking at a thrift store, and her family... We're finding all of these things throughout the history of their lives inside the stocking, and then they would talk about it.
What?
Yeah.
So like seriously. So like a receipt from their first date or something would be in the stocking magically?
But there's nothing better in life than seeing like the Christmas cookie, and you're like, two rivals enter a baking competition, and they fall in love, and it winds up being like... An uncle's cancer diagnosis is only relieved by the presence of Cookie, a delightful puppy he finds on Christmas.
See, it sounds... Because I guess I imagine they only pull out nice, warm memories.
No.
Really?
It's going to be horrible.
Okay. So I don't know if, like... I was going to say that Christmas Closet might be more exciting. They're just pulling... skeletons out of the closet.
I like the idea of anything that involves just horrible memories at Christmas, because it does mirror real life more than something fuzzy.
Right. Yeah. And like the whole way through, you're waiting for that like touching moment, but like it just ends on a down note, like the dad dies.
Yeah, I know.
The credits roll.
There's two genres on that. There's Christmas sad movies, and then Christmas. My favorite Hallmark holiday movie, I will honestly tell you, as I reveal all the layers of my guilty pleasure. Taylor Townsend from The OC was in one called Love at the Thanksgiving Day Parade. And she was organizing Chicago's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which evidently is one that happens. And she fell in love with a guy who was the rival from like the I don't know what the fuck, he had another fucking parade or something over in Detroit or something.
The Canadian Thanksgiving
Parade.
Yeah,
and so they fall in love while she's trying to organize the parade. It's great.
Just a small little situation that no one else in the world outside of parade organizers cares about. Yeah,
it's like you can't, that's not the proper clearance for a float, and she's like, but I'm just trying to please these kids.
That float's clearly going 9 miles an hour when it can't go above 6.
You get extracted to something even worse, where it's like John worked at Little Caesars and Sarah worked at Pizza Hut, and they fall in love and it compromises their work
in the Christmas pie.
Her dad works at Domino's.
Oh wow, yeah. Now the plot thickens.
Will they ever find love?
Oh, real quick at the end of the show, because you do have to go. So Idiot over here put a poll on Twitter about pizza this week.
You said poll and Polak came into my head.
I had
recurring nightmares of
So this guy was Roman on Twitter, and he put a Polak up. So you put a poll on pizza up, and you were disgusted by the results, which was if you can only eat cheese pizza. Go ahead. What was it?
If you had to choose between the rest of your life, you could only have a regular cheese pizza, or you could have pizza with one topping and that one topping only forever. Would you go with the plain cheese pizza, or the one with the one topping forever pizza? You couldn't pick it off. You had to only have like a pepperoni slice forever.
Okay.
Would you go or topping?
No, I do topping.
Yeah, because this guy thought it was going to be cheese straight away because he's such a vanilla asshole. But like,
the flavor of my asshole out of it, sir. Christ.
Well, I'm thinking like if that's the only food. Well,
tasted like lady
is this
fingers.
Like when you eat pizza, like outside of everything else you eat, you can only have that one choice, or it's like you can only eat pizza?
No, no. Time. Every other food in this scenario is available to you.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, still the topping. Yeah.
Oh my God. You son of a bitch. You were going to do the thing where you're going to find a cheese pizza like a pizza bagel would supplant the cheese slice.
It's
really Gary Bettman devious. Oh God, that's brilliant.
Man.
You didn't even think about that, did you?
No,
you found the loophole in your little question.
Well, I'm like, if you can only eat pizza, you need
a topping.
You got to throw some greens or like some protein. I mean,
I appreciate you going greens. We both know it's pepperoni is the answer.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But like, I just figure you would get tired of the one topping. Pizza itself by itself is always great. But like, if you had to have pepperoni forever, mushrooms forever, sausage forever, you would get tired of that topping and wouldn't want.
Says you, man. He just called you a vanilla asshole. So it's really starting to show.
You know who I want to meet? The person that answers that poll thinking, oh, definitely pizza with a topping, extra cheese. Like there's some guy out there that's like the...
Dude, there was like...
From his mom's basement.
People are like, well...
How dare you, sir.
People are like, well, what if I put like red pepper flakes on there or salt? Is that a topping? Like, just fucking...
That's a condiment. I can't believe a guy who probably started playing a fucking garage just called me a mom's basement blogger. It's true.
I did not call you that. Too.
Yeah, he calls us fat. He calls us old.
Fat, old.
Get the hell out of here, Kellen.
With our vanilla assholes.
I did not.
Kellen Capener, of course, is the bassist for the story so far. Where can they find all your stuff, sir?
There, you can go to thestorysofarca.com, or you can find me on the interwebs at Kellen Keller on Instagram or KellenKeller38 on Twitter. And that's it.
And also, real briefly, I noticed in searching your name that there's fan fiction about you. Were you aware of that?
You know, this gets brought to my attention more than I'd like it to. But
how does that feel?
It's weird. I've actually written my own fan fiction.
About yourself?
About myself, yeah.
Like, but I imagine like the fan fiction about you is like slash fiction with your bandmates. But the fan fiction about you that you've written is probably like you're Mario or some shit, right? And Mario Kart or what?
I can't remember what it was, but I used to write for this website called Stuff You'll Hate that no longer exists. Rest in peace. So But I, yeah, no, that was a, it was a satirical music website. And so one of the things I did was I wrote a fan fiction about myself. I can't remember what the nature of it was or like what happened, but
were you, yeah. Have you read the fan fiction that's been written about you?
I've read some of them to like maybe a paragraph in and then just had to, had to go, nope, I do not want to have this enter my mind.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Yeah, I'm Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports, Buck Daddy Blog, and this podcast, America vs. Wyshynski, buy my book. Take your eye off the puck. It's still available on Amazon, and Christmas is coming up. Your boy needs to eat. Got family to think about.
It's a married man now.
Yeah, married man now. And yeah, here's Lozo.
I got nothing to add. I got no book. I have no wife and kids. I have I got a phone. It's pretty cool.
Song in his heart.
I don't have a song in my heart. I mean, I will sing My Heart Will Go On for anybody that wants me to do it, but not on this show because everyone's got to go.
All right, bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.